test.
One, two, one, two.
We have to do the the roadie thing.
Yeah.
You ever wonder about some of the things they say? What exactly? Where did they come up with that?
No.
Bah, boo, blah, yeah. And you're like, what is that?
They're trying all the frequencies and nobody cares.
Because in the end, then you get up there and you do your sound check and it has absolutely nothing to do with what's really going on.
Exactly.
But, you know, there must be like a roadie, like probably the, you know, the dummy's guide to how to be a roadie. And it probably says, here are six sounds you must make into the microphone. Puh, duh, whoa, chuh.
And to you. Yeah.
Would you please identify yourself so I make sure, because this is radio, and that's always a problem because you could be doing an imitation of yourself.
My name is Tobias Froberg. I'm from Sweden, and I'm on tour in the U.S. for the first time, actually. And it's because of my new record, Somewhere in the City.
Wow, well done. That was a nice little box there.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Very professional.
I've been practicing, you know?
Okay. In 2003, you went from being a columnist and a writer for Sweden's, according to the bio, largest newspaper.
Yep.
And did you write about music?
I wrote about jazz music, actually.
About jazz?
Yep. And it wasn't all about jazz. It was about my life but the main thing.
So it was a column.
It was a column, but the headline of it was actually jazz music.
You also toured playing guitar, right?
Yeah.
And piano, was it?
With
other bands.
Yes.
So tell me about the bands you toured with prior, and we'll get to that pivotal moment about which is question three, of course, about your decision and the switchover and all of that.
Yes.
Then
yes.
We'll get weird, but we have to intro because, you know, this is new to a lot of my listeners.
I toured as a guitar player for a band called EP's Trailer Park in Sweden. They're pretty well known as an indie band in Sweden. So we toured a lot, but because I was a writer, I was still a writer at the time, so I didn't really gave it that much time. But I was starting to write songs for my first album. So I guess it was a transformation from being a writer and now going into a more musical world. And I've been playing drums as well in a punk band called The Dead Dildos.
I have to go here. What was The Dead Dildos' signature song?
We sang in Swedish, but the signature I can't really translate it.
Give me at least a line of a lyric.
It was like a.
You opened like, the store. We have to.
We tried to be very intellectual and pornographic. We tried to mix
intellectual pornography. Thank you.
Yeah. Basically that. I think that's the. That's the nearest.
And was there a moment where somebody did a poster saying, see the dead dildos live? Or live?
Exactly. Well, yes.
I don't want to tell the terrific story about what made you decide to make music your main career by hinting too much in my question. So I'll just use code words. I'll use Ingmar and Neil and let you tell it your own way.
My story of
how you made the transition
from pseudo
jazz columnist kind of sort of it's really about my life writer to,
you know, I guess it started when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I mean my father is a jazz musician and so I grew up with both jazz music and being a child to a musician, so I kind of you know how children are, they tend to take a long big bow around their parents' careers, and then they end up in almost the same the same room as their parents in some way. I don't know, but
my daughter does the opening and closing voiceovers for my radio show, and she's 5 years old.
Exactly. You see?
Yeah.
You see?
And I, on the other hand, took apart my parents' hi-fi when I was 3 years old, and they finally got me my own stereo and set of records because they got tired of me messing with theirs.
So when you're insane,
it's simple
as
that.
We tend to walk in our parents' footsteps in one way or the other.
Yes,
so.
Absolutely.
So, and that's what I did.
So that was the beginning of it.
That was the beginning, and when I got when I had written for a while, I've always been making music. I've always been playing with singers or with bands but I never allowed myself to do it myself, you know, and to do it the full Monty without a net. I mean, it's very easy to do it with other people because you don't fall that hard if things
it's not as brave it's
brave, it's just a choice, but I felt that I wanted to make music because that's where my true heart is, that's where I really belong, but I never allowed myself to do that until I had like 12-13 songs. And I met, me and my good friend Linus Larsson, which is a very well-known producer and technician and mixer in Sweden.
That's going to be question number four. He's right here, believe it
or not. Oh, wow, cool.
So there you go.
Cool. And, we just started to record, and it wasn't, our intentions weren't in the beginning that it's going to be a record. We just did that for fun, but then people loved it, and they wrote about it. This is the demo of the year, and this is the, you know, and we might have something here. This is probably good if people like that. You know, it's very hard to make a career out of just playing in Sweden.
And I first heard about you from another artist we had on the show, Juan Jose Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who we had on the show a few months ago.
Wow,
And we were talking about it, and I said, who else, you know, do you listen to, and what else is going on? Mm-hmm. And then he mentioned, you know, one of your partners in crime on the record. Now, how do I pronounce?
Ana Brun.
And the other one?
Jose Gonzalez.
No, Ana I can do.
Okay, Titor.
Titor.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's tough for us.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah,
that could
be
Titor or Titor or Titor.
Titor, yeah.
Right?
But it's Titor.
Right, and he mentioned, I know that he also, so you share.
We have a little
musical.
Yeah, we have. We're all good, very, very good friends. I mean, Titor and Ana Brun, which is on that record, we are very close friends. I mean, outside of the music as well.
Right. Yeah, it's a very, very tight.
And Jose is also a very close friend of mine. I mean, we have been on tour for 2 years, I think, together or something like that.
And it's cool because then people try to compare. It's kind of like, okay, singer-songwriter.
For saying that.
No. But it's insane because, number one, I've eliminated the term singer-songwriter from my vernacular because I think a single person, if you look at, let's take Ed Harcourt as the perfect example. Mm. He's not a singer-songwriter. He's a band.
Exactly. And that's what I'm trying to be.
He's a band.
Myself,
you think of all the instruments you play. Yeah. You're not a sing. What's a singer-song, you know? Was James Taylor a singer-songwriter? Well, no, because he had Jim Keltner on drums.
Is Paul McCartney a singer-songwriter?
Is Paul McCartney
or Elton John?
Right. Are these singer-songwriters? Yeah. No.
In a way, they are, but not.
Well,
not
yeah, they do sing and they do write songs.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to that term means the guy who plays bad folk songs at a bar late at night and it's. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean
the category thing's just gotta go.
Exactly. I mean. In a way, I can see why people, because you know what happens when you listen to a record the first time or listen to an artist the first time, the first thing you want to do is finding
a comparison.
Exactly.
Of course.
But it's very hard sometimes to read reviews.
Now you recorded the album in this wild mix studios, your apartment. And you said that, I read on your website, that you spent theoretically over 100 days in the studio. Mm. And, you know, in your pursuit of what you say wasn't perfection.
No.
Because perfection would have made for a very dry, very unlively album. But how many places did you record this album in?
I think I don't really like proper recording studios with everything, because I think one of the key words for making good music, for making good art, is limitation. And if you go back and look at what Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel did, for example, or the Beatles with four track, or Beach Boys, I mean,
it's an interesting thing, because I look at New York, for example. New York's a huge town, mm-hmm. but there's a very tight group of musicians there. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of places in the world there really aren't, and even England is so diverse, because everybody says, well, did a band come from London? No, they came from the north. Yeah. Well, they came from Leeds. Well, wait a minute, they came from Liverpool, they came from Manchester, yeah, and everything's got a sound. Whereas in New York, it's kind of like the Ramones next to the New York Dolls, next to Simon and Garfunkel, can all exist together, because it's all just about great music. And it sounds like Sweden is very much the same way.
Sweden is very much the same way, in that aspect. I mean, the thing that we do, I think, all us, I mean, me, Arne, Titor, Jose Gonzalez, Nikolai Dunger, the thing when it comes to Scandinavian artists like myself, like Titor, like Arne Brun, like Nikolai Dunger and Dungen, for example, is that I think that we all go back to the main sources when it comes to our own influences. I mean, I go back to Simon Garfunkel. We don't really listen to new music and take it from there. I think that we all go back and have a large respect for the old way of making music, and that is one thing that combines us. I mean, Then I don't think that we are making the same music.
And it has something to do with the fact that you had all that music, but it was served up in a mix with a whole bunch of other things, versus here, we just had that music.
Yeah, exactly.
And we didn't have, except for certain bands we'll just not even do in this room, we didn't have that much Swedish music.
No, exactly.
And the ones we had were the candy-coated, situation.
And that's a large aspect of it all as well. I mean, I do have a lot of Swedish harmonies in me that I think that comes out in one way or the other. I can hear that anyway. I don't know if anyone else can, but I can hear that. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a Swedish American music.
So I know that when the night turns cold. And it's so funny, you don't know where your interest lies, the flip side of Faking It. Mm. And I've always turned over the 45 of Faking It and played You Don't Know Where Your Interest Lies, because it's such a, just that middle where, you know, it's rocking, and then it just gets very quiet, you're going to blow it, dun, 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 you know, and it's got that whole riff. And then you mix that with a Nina Simone influence for the bongos.
Yeah.
What kind of drugs? Come on.
Well, I'm so glad that you know what you're talking about here. We're talking the same language, and I'm very glad.
It helps sometimes.
Yeah, it helps.
It helps.
When it comes to that Nina Simone thing, it was that bongo that I heard when I listened to her version of My Way, and you know that the bongos are up to the left. I love the panning thing of the old recordings. Then I wanted the middle section of the song to be completely different from the other parts, and because of that Simon and Garfunkel thing, which I love. I love that when, you know, the part when you can hear that it's somebody cut it.
Absolutely.
It's so great. It's so great.
And now Elizabeth, wherever she is, this is a different version than the original. So you've really sweated over this woman.
Yeah.
Does she exist, and do you love her?
Well, my first album...
You spent a lot of time with this woman, I have to tell you.
Well, I did, because Elizabeth is like five different persons. And one of them is actually my mother, and another one is my grandmother, but it's also my ex-girlfriend, and it's and I felt that I want to do one sequel song on this new album. So I
Elizabeth, she is back.
She still exists.
Elizabeth exists. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. She's alive.
That track is an example of the older sounds that you like, timeless things, mm-hmm. like the Mini Moog, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you use a lot of timeless instrumentation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not saying old fashioned, I'm saying timeless.
Timeless,
because,
exactly.
Because when I hear a Hammond organ or a Fisa organ or the, you know, the Mini Moog or just the right tambourine, it brings you all sorts of places. Mm. And that's really cool.
And it always works.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it does. But people don't know, the listeners don't know why, but you, on the other hand, are a smart man because you've also been on the other side, and I know why, too.
Mm-hmm.
Familiarity breeds listenability, and in the end, well, I'll ask you this because, you know, it's not even on my list. You want to sell records. You're not in this just to make that homebrew, oh, well, let's make a record and now, have three people hear it.
True. At this point... That's true. I mean, that's not the point when you're actually recording or writing songs. I'm going to do a hit here. But when we are here, yes, that's the case. That's part of
the
case.
There are bands, there are, you know, the whole indie thing is, well, we'll just make something. You know what? Heck, mm-hmm. three people, we've done our job because we've affected the musical heritage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you haven't. People, the only way you really move music forward or backward, and backward's okay too, is if people hear it.
Yeah, of course I want people to hear my music. I mean, and when people say that they are moved by it or that it means something, I mean, that's so... That's the biggest reward. I mean, and then I have to make a living on it. I mean, that's my
helps.
Job.
That
yeah,
helps.
But that's my job. So I have to sell albums. I have to try to do as well as I can.
As opposed to, like I said, when I was growing up and there wasn't that much. Now there is. I've named it the Swedish Invasion because, okay, Jose, you know, Nikolai, but then even the Caesars, the Shout Out Louds. Yeah. All of which I've had on this show.
Okay.
You're taking over America. Why do you think that with all of the slick Brit pop and NME writing up every band as the greatest band that ever lived, and then, for better or for worse, we won't mention any names, even some people in this country that do what I do, that come on and do the same thing. This is the greatest band that ever lived. Do you think that maybe America's ready for a lot of what's going on in Sweden, because, like you said, I don't want to say it's comfortable to them or familiar to them, but maybe all of that input that's gone into, you know, Swedish bands, like you said, the classic input, maybe we're all just longing for that these days.
I think so. I mean, I think it's
comes easily to us, you know,
and because of the fact that. I mean, if you're listening to Somewhere in the City, it has some clear references, and it may get people to listen to the actual sources as well. I mean, if they discover this record, they might rediscover Simon Garfunkel again, for example, because music. I love music that breathes and that live. I mean, this sounds very new agey kind of thing
that's
to say,
okay.
but you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, I think that America is. I mean, America has produced some of the best music in the world, and I mean, 10 years ago. Artists like myself or Anne Brun or whatever couldn't sell out tickets for theaters and people wouldn't go to live shows as much.
So the last thing we do before we get to our live session, we do a little thing called a musical sandwich.
All right.
And you of all people are going to have a lot of fun with this. Sometimes you get people just pulling out their iPods saying, let me see, what am I listening to? So it's two of your songs as the bread.
Yeah.
And most likely two of the songs we'll play in the session. And then as many songs by other artists as you want to play in between.
From this album, I take God's Highway, and I take Forever is just a word in a love song, which is the last song.
Excellent.
And then we start with the middle area of it. And I have to say Forever by the Beach Boys from Sunflower, which I think is the best Beach Boy album of them all.
Those harmonies in the middle where they just rise.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost, it's almost angelic.
That was actually the reason why I wrote that song. It's just a sequel to that song. Old Friends, Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh my gosh, I played that last week on my Friday show. And yeah. I forgot what I segued into, with the violins at the end and then that little guitar riff.
Yeah.
I just overlapped something for about 30 seconds and I don't even remember what it was, but I just hit it. And then at the end I was like, oh my God, that was fun.
Yeah.
Am I playing just Old Friends, or am I playing Old Friends bookends? Am I doing
the whole
thing?
Shebang, yeah.
It's very important to ask that. Very important, because that makes for a very different movement.
And Andalusia by John Cage, of course. That's a pretty song. And Rock and Roll by Velvet Underground. I want to take another Beach Boys song. Tears in the Morning.
Nice.
Brothers in Arms with Dire Straits.